Hi, I'm Kevin DeCristofano.
I'm Sean Flanagan.
And we are the Ninja Turtle Nerds, your weekly comic book podcast covering the Ninja Turtle comics, one artificial intelligent issue at a time. What's going on there, Sean?
So I had a good laugh today seeing everyone freak out about the debut image of Darth Vader in the Obi-Wan show. That picture literally could have been from anything in Star Wars.
Yeah, I saw what you're talking about, and I actually thought it was a still from Rogue One, and I was like, oh, when I opened the article, it'll show me the real image.
Yep.
And that was it. And I was like, oh, I thought this was in Rogue One. I mean, by the time people are listening to this, that show's over and done with.
But I just thought it was funny because everybody was like, oh my God. And I'm like, he doesn't have decals or like, it's literally the same thing you've seen. Like, it's not like you can see Hayden Christensen through the mask. Yeah. So I just got a really good laugh out of that. So.
Yeah, I think there are like slight differences to the early Vader costume. I just don't know them. So hopefully they're keeping that continuity going.
It's probably not anything significant enough that you can release a photo and be like, huh?
Yeah, I know. There's one that I actually know that I was mad about when Revenge of the Sith came out, because the only one that I can notice they didn't do. When they put him in the Vader costume in Revenge of the Sith, it doesn't line up with A New Hope, where, like, the eyes in the A New Hope Vader are kind of red. They had, like, a red tint to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't at all in Revenge of the Sith. They didn't do it. And I was like, that's the one difference I can spot. Why, why didn't you match that? But anyway, that's some Star Wars news there.
Think James Earl Jones gets sick of those
Star
calls.
Wars, actually. Like, I'm doing Clone Wars now.
I've done bits and pieces.
I found a way to watch it. I felt like, because I every time I would try the show, I would quit. What I do is, like, I'm basically, like, I play my Switch while it's on. And the only way I can do it, and it's getting me to the point where I'm interested in it. So
okay,
you know, whatever helps, you know, put some Tony Hawk on, so that's a game I don't have to think a lot about, and I can pay attention to the show. But I don't know, I just could never do it straight. Like, I can't just focus on Clone Wars. There's something about it where I need to be doing something else.
I just never, and it's probably because there was so much of it at the time. I didn't find the prequel era as interesting.
I love Phantom Menace, and that's something that's happened with age. I've gotten so much nostalgia now for, like, when that movie came out, and honestly, I think it might be the best prequel. Like, it definitely does the most different.
It's
like, it introduces so many cool ideas, like the pod. Like, everyone hated on the pod race at the time. Right now, the pod race is one of my favorite things in the whole prequel era. You know, like, it was such a cool thing. Just so many, like, I love the N1 Starfighter. That thing's a cool design.
Yeah, yeah.
So, obviously, you've got Duel of the Fates, you've got Darth Maul. There's a lot of good stuff in Phantom Menace. And, like, I have a lot of nostalgia for the time. Like, I remember the build-up to that movie. So
that's
definitely affecting it. I didn't feel that as hard for any of the follow-up movies. I mean, I definitely anticipated them, but it wasn't, like, you know, a lifetime at the time. You know, my whole life was leading up to that movie, it felt like. And then the next two, it was like, okay, this is the next one, and I'll anticipate it the way I anticipate any other sequel.
It's funny, too, because it's such a 90s time, because I remember when the teaser trailer was going to start playing, people were buying tickets to movies just to go see the teaser trailer and then leaving.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they talk about that on Star Wars Minute podcast, I remember. It was during their Phantom Menace season. Yeah, there were people who literally went to that movie, like, multiple times. And what they were doing eventually, because they were having so many walkouts of people who just went there to see the Star Wars trailer, they started putting it at the end of the movie. Yeah. Yeah, it got that bad.
Oh, that's funny.
But now, like, sequels, like, you don't even... Well, you know what? I do a little bit of gearing up for sequels still, because I'm currently gearing up for the Mission Impossible sequel. What I'm doing is every month I'm going to be watching a different Mission Impossible movie until that comes out. Because I think that comes out, what, September? Something like that?
I don't know. Movies change release date so much now. I never know when anything is.
You know what I think is funny about Mission Impossible, the franchise? It's like a good mile marker. Have I ever told you this?
No.
To me, it's like a good mile marker for how far movies have come in terms of storytelling. Because I remember when the first Mission Impossible movie came out, a lot of the reviews were negative. And a lot of what the critics said about the movie was that it was too confusing. The plot was too convoluted and too confusing and too hard to follow. And you could probably find those reviews if you go to look them up. And people agreed at the time. People thought that movie was really hard to follow and confusing. Nowadays, if you watch that movie, it's not hard to follow at all. And I think that's because storytelling in the years since has evolved so much that, like, people literally seek that out now. Like, they like shows like Lost or Westworld. Like, they build their entire fan base over confusing storytelling.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, you gotta know how to put all the pieces together. And like, it's not even that complicated a story. Go back and watch the first Mission Impossible with that in mind, and you'll be like, wow, people thought this was confusing. This is so, like, yeah, there's a twist, but, like, it's not hard to just rewind your brain a little bit and recontextualize the scenes that the twist applies to. You know what I mean? Which I feel like was their problem.
I feel like the fifth movie reused that plot point, because isn't the original movie they're trying to get the list of agents back?
Yes.
I think five had the same, like, type of story.
Yeah, and then, like, the big twist is, like, the guy you think died at the beginning of the movie ends up showing up, and then he ends up basically being the bad guy. And I don't know, like, I can't explain the whole movie in two sentences, but, like, the thing is, like, it's a very easy twist. It's literally a twist that easy to follow. Like, it's like, oh, he wasn't dead because he's the bad guy. He faked the whole thing. Like, none of that where the mission went wrong. The mission didn't actually go wrong. Like, he was creating the illusion that it was going wrong, and it was all going to his according to his plan. It's like literally a twist that simple, and critics were like, this is too confusing. He's supposed to be a good guy. Why is he saying bad things?
Yeah, that franchise is interesting to see how, I guess, small it started. Like, oh, the big moments.
Oh, yeah.
Him hanging off this wire in this room to just...
Well, like, the big stunt. You know how he does, like, a stunt every movie?
Yeah.
The big stunt in the first one is just him running away from a fish tank that explodes.
Yep. And now every movie's like, you know, I haven't physically fought a natural disaster. How do we get that into the movie?
So anyway, segueing from there, okay, Mission Impossible, they have cool gadgets, they use lots of crazy technology. This comic book has crazy technology taking over a turtle. This comic book is Image Comics number 6, it's untitled like all of them. The cover artist this time is just credited as Frank Fosco. It's not all those other names we've had up to this point, so... Little, everything else is the same. Story by Gary Coulson, pencils Frank Fosco, inks Andrew Pepoy, lettering Chris Alopoulos, colors by Adam Gazowski. That's all the same. The cover date for this TMNT book, January 1997. So let's go take a look back at January of 97. This month in entertainment. The movie that came out that month, I only found one that I recognize, because January is not a big month for movies. at least not in 97. No. There were movies that came out. It's just none of them were like, they were all like, I don't know, I guess too adult for us at the time. It was nothing I recognized. But I did recognize Beverly Hills Ninja.
That seems that like it would Chris have Farley been a classic. January movie.
Mm-hmm. Was that his last movie?
No. Almost Heroes is his last movie.
But he has a small part in that, right? Or is no, he a main no. character?
He was one of the main characters.
I've never seen that.
Beverly Hills Ninjas.
What's it about?
It's him and Matthew Perry, and it's they're exploring America in the 1600s or something.
Man, remember when Matthew Perry was in movies? Like, when he had his Friends fame and yeah. he could do off-season stuff? Because he was in that other movie with, was it Selma Hayek?
Yeah. Yep. That was...
Where they had a baby together. Man, that movie hasn't aged well now that I'm thinking about it. Like, the whole... That is such a poorly aged movie. Like, the whole plot of that movie is... Isn't it crazy that a white guy and a Spanish girl got together? Like, that's kind of the whole point of the movie.
Fools Rush In. Is that what that was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's Mexican and he's white. What's going to happen?
He's Matthew Perry and he's Bruce Willis.
Yeah. Wow. Beverly Hills Ninja, though. Another ninja movie. Music from January 97. Still Unbreak My Heart by Toni Braxton.
Of course.
Still the number one song. Not going to get that off for a while. This is a very cool Nintendo Power cover, though. Moving on to video games. It's a Shadows of the Empire cover,
ooh.
Which to this day, I've mentioned it a few times in this segment here, but I saved this till now. Shadows of the Empire is my favorite piece of Star Wars extended universe. And to me, it's still canon. I know it's Legends at this point. I don't know if there's anything that directly contradicts it. There probably is. But I love Shadows of the Empire. I've read that book multiple times. It's got my favorite Darth Vader moment, period. Like, including all the Star Wars films. So... message us on Twitter if you want to know what that is. I don't want to spoil it for anyone who might still read Shadows of the Empire. But there's a really cool Darth Vader moment in
that's
it.
That's the only book I know of that had a score composed for it.
Well, do you know what the whole thought process of it was? So
I vaguely remember, but go
even
into
if
it.
You do, for anyone who doesn't. So here's something that's hard to imagine. In the early 90s, well, I guess we're in the mid-90s in 97 here. At this point in history, there hadn't been a lot of Star Wars stuff since Return of the Jedi. Return of the Jedi ended, and then like they had a few toys, and yeah, there was like some Ewok movies and things, like random things here and there. But there wasn't a lot of Star Wars stuff out there. And they were basically gearing up to be like, okay, should we do these prequel movies that George keeps talking about? Because George saw Jurassic Park, and that was when George Lucas thought, okay, special effects are ready. They're where I need them to be to make these prequels. So they weren't sure if the audience was there, though. They were like, okay, as far as movies go, Star Wars is 10 years old at this point. Return of the Jedi, anyway. You know, we haven't had a new movie in forever. So what they did with Shadows of the Empire was a marketing decision. They were like, we're going to do everything a movie would have. We're going to do a toy line. We're going to do a video game. We're going to do a comic book. We're going to do a novelization. We're going to do everything a movie would have without actually making the movie.
Oh, wow.
And to see how well that does, and if it does well, we'll go ahead and start doing more Star Wars stuff. And of course, it did fantastic. Because it was the first new Star Wars thing in forever that had like a big, you know, that was all tied around one thing. So everybody latched onto it like crazy.
That's really cool. I mean, now it wouldn't really be a big deal, but yeah, it's funny to think mm-hmm. there was a period where people weren't sure if Star Wars would still be a thing.
Exactly, yeah. And to tell you the truth, I feel like they exaggerated a little bit when, because that's how I've heard it told. And every time I hear it told that way, even though I just told it that way, I always think, you know what? They probably would have made the movies anyway. What that really probably did was gauge what kind of a budget should we sink into these movies. You know what I mean? Like, should we sink the full $300 million or should we try to scale it and do some practical effects and do it for like $150
million? So, I don't, have we had a live-action Dash Rendar?
Nope.
No.
I think his ship is like in the background of one of the prequels, but I'm not sure about that.
Okay.
Moving on to TV events. January 1st, the TV rating system, a system similar to the one used for motion pictures, goes into effect. So they had already designed it. January 1st, the first day of 97, is when they started that.
I remember that.
Oh, yeah. It was a big deal. And, like, there were, I always think of the Simpsons gag that Halloween, so 10 months later, where they were making fun of it, where they, like, kept stabbing the person and the rating kept going up.
Yep. The rating was stabbing them.
Yeah, yeah. There
yeah,
you go.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, the whole first South Park movie was geared around the V-chip.
Yep.
Because they made it like give them static shock, electric shocks or something. January 12th, King of the Hill premieres.
Oh, really?
Weird time to premiere a show, January. But yeah, according to Wikipedia. January 17th, The Mighty Ducks, the animated series ends after one season, 26 episodes.
No.
You know how I know all the Mighty Ducks left? Because ducks fly together.
Yes, they do.
January 27th, Space Cases ends after two seasons and 27 episodes. So I follow a podcast called Big Orange Couch, which is a Nickelodeon nostalgia podcast. They are not fans of Space Cases, which bums me out, but they have talked about it a few times. They just, it wasn't something they watched at the time. And I'm wondering, like, get at me on Twitter, guys, who else out there liked Space Cases at the time? Because I was nuts for that show, both seasons it was on. I remember literally thinking, like, this is going to be my Star Trek. Like, I am going to go all in on this thing that I am seeing from the beginning. And it's very, very similar to Star Trek. Do you know the story to Space Cases?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah. I don't know why I even ask you these questions, because I always go on to explain it anyway for anyone listening who doesn't know. But anyone listening who doesn't know, Space Cases, it's you know, it's a kid's show. I was age appropriate at the time. I was like the age of the kids on the show. 97, what were we? We were like 13. It's about like a group of like kids, ages like I'd say like 10 to 14. They're in a school in the future, like Star Trek. And they're in like a space station school, and this strange ship docks with the space station. And I forget why they went on board. Like, you'd think they'd want to keep the kids away from there, but they went on board. And then it turns out the ship has like a mind of its own, and it ends up, it's got like a lost in space element to it where the ship leaves. And now they're trying to get back home on this ship, and it's all their adventures in space. So it's very Star Trek-esque. Star Trek meets, I don't know, some sort of teen drama meets Lost in Space. So yeah, I loved it, and it only lasted 30 episodes, and I don't know. I wish it had more of an audience. I haven't ever heard anyone give me a reason why people didn't like it, other than maybe they thought it was boring, but like there was nothing wrong with the show. You know, no one's ever been like, oh, it had bad storytelling or it had bad special effects or anything. Like, it's a good show. So tune into Space Cases Nerds, my new podcast, where we go over all 27 episodes of Space Cases, one episode at a time. Saturday Night Live, January 11th, was hosted by Kevin Spacey with musical guest Beck. Less said about that, the better. January 18th was hosted by David Allen Greer with musical guest Snoop Doggy Dogg, because that's what he went by back then. He had the full Snoop Doggy Dogg title.
Wrote a song about
it? I don't know what David Allen Greer was there for.
Yeah, I don't know what he was doing then. Being funny.
Yeah, he's got the comedy in him. So why don't you tell our listeners where they can find this comic book we're about to talk about, Sean?
So you can find this on Comixology and in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Urban Legends, Volume 1.
Sounds so spooky, Urban Legends. If I had children, I would not let them read that. So this cover... the cover has Casey Jones with a chainsaw for some reason attacking Donatello. He doesn't have the chainsaw inside the issue, but I guess baseball bats don't sell comics, so.
No, he upgraded, you know. I could see.
Little bit of ash in him.
Yeah, but I mean, there's... like televised chainsaw competitions and things. I mean, I guess it's a sport. I have to say, I'm not a fan of his purge mask.
So yeah, they've changed. That's something we should talk about. You're right. So they changed the Casey Jones mask, which I guess they had to because Raphael is wearing his traditional mask. So what they did was now it's a hockey mask that, you know, it's got a triangle top to it. It kind of reminds me of Scarlet Witch's crown that she wears.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's got like that kind of top to it, and as far as shape goes. And then painted on it is like an American flag for some reason, even though I don't consider Casey to be very patriotic. I don't know what they're trying to get at there. And then over the mouth is like stitches, like he's in Slipknot, even though Slipknot wasn't really a thing yet. This definitely looks like a Slipknot mask.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just edgy to be edgy, I guess. I don't know. I'm not a fan.
I wish I knew what the American flag thing was all about.
The
if
only
you know,
thing I could think
let
of
us know.
That maybe it's a nod to Nuke from Daredevil, but that
could
might
be
a stretch.
Yeah, I don't know. He doesn't strike me as very patriotic, so not sure. And we don't even get like an origin of the new mask. He just has it.
Yep.
Like, if he pulled it off a shelf or something, like I could see like, me, okay, he found that one and he thought it looked cool. But it just shows up.
I like to think that maybe when he gave Raph his mask, Raph made him this mask in case he didn't have the heart to tell him it was horrible.
So the cover is him with a chainsaw attacking a robot Donatello. And this is a cover I actually own two copies of because it's one of those comics where I wasn't paying attention and bought a book I already own.
You're right.
And those always stand out to me whenever I see them. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't, yeah. It was before I had that app where I keep track of all my purchases. If those of you who don't know, really cool comic book app for avoiding this mistake is CLZ Comics. C as in cat, L as in left, Z as in Zedmore. I don't know. Comics. And it was when I got it a one-time purchase of like $4.99, I think, and it organizes your whole comic book library for you. I've heard that since though, it's now moved on to like a dollar a month subscription thing or something like that. I don't know their prices. All I know is I love this app and it ensures I never buy a comic I already own. It's right there on my phone. I've got my whole collection scanned in and I'm like, okay, I have that one. Don't need to buy it. It's wonderful. I know some people, they make like an Excel sheet. I've seen all kinds of things people do. So But if you're looking for an app, that's a good one. But it's got a monthly charge now. I do know that. Anyway, it was nice of them to grandfather me in, though. Like, the grandfather, anyone who had already paid the one-time price, they didn't make them pay now. If you had already paid that, you didn't have to pay the monthly. Okay, so moving into the comic book. So in the turtle's lair, Leonardo is sweeping up the sewers. Must take forever.
Seems kind of like a losing battle, but...
Yeah, exactly. And Mikey, he walks in with the baby turtles that we saw in the first issue in their little turtle bowl. And Leo tells him he was just thinking about what happened to Master Splinter and where he might have gone. Which is last issue, you remember, they saw a bat that Leonardo suspected to be Splinter flying out of a cave that they exploded. So
I don't know.
Yeah, he was thinking about that.
Splinter Bat would go.
Is he just I don't know.
Terrorizing like tea houses.
He's literally a. They call bats rats with wings, and now he is a rat with wings. So, where do they go?
Rats with wings. Anyway, Mikey, he's got
Mikey's got the baby turtles there. There's definitely still an effort on the writing staff to, you know, do this exposition that fills in new readers, because we have another we had an example last issue of it. Now this issue we have Leonardo bringing up that they don't know where Splinter is, and then Mikey says he wants to give the baby turtles to, and he says Casey's daughter Shadow, which isn't how you would naturally talk. Nope. I want to give him the Casey's daughter Shadow. We all know Shadow, Mikey. Why wouldn't you just say, I want to give these to Shadow?
I don't know. I feel like somebody's watching us.
And then they further go on. Well, I'll get to that in a minute. So this whole thing, it's like a stage play, because now Raphael enters stage right. And he chimes in that the one turtle Michelangelo can't find was stepped on by Donnie, and he says he flattened him with that armor of his that weighs a ton. More stuff filling you in on what's going on.
Aww.
Yeah, I felt bad for the turtle. He's like, Donnie sure has been acting weird since he got that robot armor. And then Raphael is like, we can't baby him. Look at me. My face got burned off. Remember, everybody, that in issue five, five issues ago, my face got burned off?
Again, how people naturally talk.
Yeah. And then he looks right at the reader and says, did you buy that issue? So,
did you?
They go on to check up on Donatello. They start talking about how he's been talking to himself a lot lately, which I kind of liked.
Yeah.
I thought his robot suit is very Venom from Spider-Man. Like, I said that when it first took over his body, and it's continuing to do that. It kind of talks to him, and he's like been talking to himself. It's cool. I like it a lot. That character was, you know, popular at this time, so it makes sense for them to go through that. So they walk in on Donatello with his Mega Man blaster arm pointed at his own head. And it's not really designed like the Mega Man thing. It's like, you know, the gun design, it's very 90s comics. It's giant, like something you'd see like Cable and the X-Men carrying. Like, put some pouches on him. So anyway, his brothers tell him, don't do it, Donnie. But he pulls the trigger anyway and click. He was faking him out. He was just testing if he properly programmed the suit to not hurt himself, which is what I do every day, Sean. I just take a knife out of the drawer and I just see if I can't stab myself, but see if I properly programmed my brain to not.
It kind of sets the tone going for a the little day.
Far. Yeah. So anyway, then Raphael, he's all like, man, that armor looks heavy. Let's see how fast you can move. And Donatello tells him, like, I'm not ready for sparring yet because I'm still hearing voices in my head here, dude. Like, sometimes the suit has a mind of its own. again, more Venom type stuff. So the Turtles all convince Donnie that he needs to get back to practicing at some point.
Because he's chicken.
So they all start fighting. They just all gang up on him. They just jump, like all three of them jump down on Donatello. Meanwhile, Casey Jones is arriving with some groceries and he hears the commotion. And he pulls down his mask, eager to get in on the action, his brand new mask. Because from his point of view, the Turtles are fighting another robot intruder. He doesn't, even though we find out later that he has been informed that Donatello is a cyborg now, I guess it didn't occur to him right here. So he sneaks up on the fight and he clocks Donnie with his baseball bat. And now the robot armor thinks Casey is an enemy. So they start fighting. The computer brain takes control of Donatello and registers Casey as an enemy. Just before it can kill Casey, Donatello regains control thanks to some fast talking from Leonardo and Casey basically being like, this isn't you, Donnie, that whole cliche thing. They basically argue the AI into giving Donatello control over his body back.
Which, again, you do all the time.
I think what they should have done is like Leonardo should have taken out like a bunch of pictures and been like, quick, select all the images that have street lights. And then like the AI just shuts down. Because we all know computers can't do that. So Casey and Mikey, they head back. This issue is kind of simple. I feel like this issue is to fill in new readers more than the other one.
Yeah.
Because we're already almost done describing what happens. So after that, Casey and Mikey, they head back to the apartment that April and Casey, they now share together with Shadow, right? Because that's where we left them off the last volume, is they all, the three, April, Casey, and Shadow are living together in the building that April owns. I love this bit where when they get there, April gives Mikey some of his mail and it's all responses to his last batch of stories. And it's a nice setup for, I think this comes back in a few issues, but it's great setting that up here. And it's also a nice callback to that last Ronin fanfic he did in issue 17 of volume 1.
I wonder
if they made a...
An image, the other three they scar, but it's like, let's give Mikey a writing career.
And it's weird because, like, I wonder if they made a conscious decision to switch this to, it's not really a switch because we, like I said, there was issue 17 where we saw him do that writing last Ronin story. He was wearing the Batman shirt. But, like, they also did this thing in issue 11 where Donatello found the typewriter.
Yep.
He found that typewriter in the attic. And I wonder if there was a conscious decision to be like, you know what, never mind that for Donnie. Let's give it, this makes more sense for Michelangelo. Or if it was just a coincidence, like if they just forgot about that altogether.
Makes you wonder if there was, like, a meeting for writing and they're like, all right, we did this to Donnie. We did this to what can we do to Mikey? And they have all this horrific stuff. And somebody just went, what if he's a writer? Ooh, I like it.
That's the worst thing we could do to him. Just living in a constant stream of rejection. But in this constant stream of rejection, he actually, he's got a good newsletter. In the pile, April reveals to Mikey that he's now a professional writer. Poetry Digest has purchased not one, but two of his poems, which I can only assume are about pizza.
They're really well written, though.
It was Ode to Cheese and A Poem of Pepperoni were his two poems. So Mikey tells April to keep the check because he feels bad that he can't help out with any more than just babysitting. And then Casey comes down. He's done with his shower. I guess Donatello fixed the hot water. Donatello is a hot water heater at this point. I would
say he is him.
He congratulates Mikey and leaves. They both leave together to whatever they were going to. I can't even remember it. Oh, they're going to like a dinner because Casey got promoted to manager of the supermarket. Produce manager. He's the produce manager. So which remember when he
goes to show.
Remember when he put his
people.
Boss's head in a bag? And
yeah. That did not.
I'm going to assume this is a different grocery store.
Or it's the same chain and they really didn't like that guy and this was kind of an attaboy.
They called him up as soon as they fired that guy. So that night we see Mikey and Shadow, Casey's daughter, Shadow. That's what we should call her from now on, as if that's how people talk. We see Mikey and Casey's daughter, Shadow. She's not even Casey's daughter, Shadow. It's weird that, like, he didn't say April and Casey. He said Casey's daughter, Shadow. But she's biologically only Gabe's daughter who died.
Yep.
So, yep. Anyway. I'm not saying, like, you know, I understand, like, adopted children, they're still yours and things like that. But what I'm saying is it's weird that he singles Casey out when I feel like April is equal parts this child's parent, which the book also goes to equal lengths to say, because there's a part where April is feeling bad. I don't remember if that's this issue or not, but there is a part where April is, like, feeling bad and Casey's like, look, you're as much her mom as I am her dad. Like, they specifically say that. So,
yep.
That's why I think it's weird that they singled Casey out. Anyway, Mikey tells April. Oh, I already did that part. He tells April to keep the check. That night, we see Mikey and Shadow playing video games on the couch. He reads her a bedtime story. And because he's Mikey, he falls asleep instead of Shadow falling asleep. So Shadow, she gets up and starts playing video games again, because that's what I did when I wanted to stay up past bedtime. I remember having to play my Game Boy by the hallway light because my parents had to think I was sleeping. You remember doing that?
Them were the days.
You had to angle it just right. All right. So anyway, she goes to playing video games and then she notices that the front door is open. So she thinks Mama and Dada are home. And she goes to investigate, gets kidnapped, just like that. We don't even see it. That's how quick it can be, parents out there. Watch your kids. This is a cautionary tale. This podcast was 100 episodes here just to raise awareness. Seriously, like they don't. It happens off panel. And we end on the front door open with her doll on the ground. So, I guess she doesn't play with that Batman and Godzilla anymore that we saw in Volume 2. It's now like a Raggedy Ann doll.
Well, I mean, it's much more image.
It doesn't even say to be continued. It just says continued. Did you notice that?
Yeah, they copped out a little on this one.
They couldn't pay for those extra four letters. They were over budget. Can't have 2B. And that is this week's issue. So what is the title that you came up for this week, Sean?
I went with Don't Wake Donnie.
Oh, yeah, because of the fight. Now, I had a hard time with this one. I've got two titles, and I don't like either of them. But, the first one I came up with was Gone Mikey Gone, but that didn't make sense because it's not him that gets kidnapped, it's the girl, but it's obviously a play on Gone Baby Gone,
yeah,
which was a movie about, you know, a little girl that got kidnapped, so it matched up. But Gone Mikey Gone doesn't really work because it's the kid that gets kidnapped. So the title I went with was another reference to the Donatello stuff. And I got to stop doing Donatello stuff, but it's The Computer War Turtle Shell.
Oh, that's good. I like that. you beat me on both of them this past few episodes.
And as far as a rating goes, I also gave this one, oh no, this is different than last week. I gave it a little lower than last week because this is very like much like just catch up new readers issue. Like this is very much in between story arcs. You know, you can see it here. It's like, let's get all the information on the last story arc in, and then in the last two pages, we're going to start the new story arc, yeah. Which isn't bad, but it always prevents it from going over that 4.5, like amazing mark. So I gave it a 4.2 out of 5. Still really good, but doesn't hit that. Like I'm starting to realize how my ratings go. And like for a 4.5 or higher, it has to just be like no exposition, no like, you know, recaps, just like straightforward, like great issue start to finish, you know?
So I went with a 3.5 because I thought overall this issue was a little dull.
Okay, yeah, so you saw the dip too. And I also got to say, I don't know, we try not to draw too much attention to this stuff on the show, but I'm also not a fan of the design of the Image Comics April. She is definitely an Image Comics female design, which the less said about that, the better. There's a lot of testosterone in Image Comics and a lot of the things that aren't so good about comics. And, you know, if you're okay with it, I don't want to alienate any listeners. Like, it's cool. You know, it's not... they like Mondo Gecko said last episode, it could have been worse.
Yes. Yeah, it's tasteful compared to some, but... I would say that I think Casey's introduction is lame.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think because we've been reading Turtle Comics straight through. I bet if I took a break like the publication did, yeah. It would be more of an impact that this is the introduction of Image Comics Casey Jones. Which, like I said, it didn't even occur to me because as far as you and I are concerned, we saw him seven issues ago when we were doing volume two.
I don't know. I get what they were trying to do, but I was like, oh, okay. He shows up with this new mask you don't explain, and he's bringing them groceries, and sure.
Yeah, I mean, I'm starting to realize they don't really nail Casey. Well, you know what? I'm going to take that back. I love volume one, Casey Jones. They just, volume two, he kind of takes a dip. He really takes a dip here. And then, I think he comes into full effect in IDW, like a lot of the series does.
Again, it's strange that Image, of all people, didn't seem to know what to do with him.
Yeah, you're right. Like, he is very much just the street-level vigilante that they seem to love.
So
they could have given him a chainsaw like they gave him on the cover. Like, you want to make that change? I'm all for it. He could carry that in a golf bag.
Yeah, I guess I was a little bummed when you open it up and there's no chainsaw.
All right, so that is everything we have to say about this Image comic. Very pretty comic. I'm scrolling through it right now. It's got some good colors. We didn't say that about it. So like I love the colors of like during the turtle fight, and like you get mm-hmm. this like cool blue when there's a part we didn't mention where Donatello got damaged and the robot body starts repairing him. And I also really like the late night effect when Shadow is playing the video games at the end here. It's very good. Maybe I just like blue. I don't know. She's going to an open mic, actually. She didn't get kidnapped. She just started a comedy career because when the doors open here, there's a brick wall. And it kind of just looks like she's going to do an open mic night.
You're up, kid.
You got 5 minutes. All right, so yeah, that's our thoughts on this issue. But Sean did us a favor, and he took some notes on Ninja Turtle Adventures comics, so we can keep that going. So yeah, so why don't you tell me what you read?
I got number 19, and I feel so jealous because yours was so simple, and mine's right back to convoluted and confusing. So.
Well, don't worry. I already started taking notes for number 20, and it goes back to convoluted real quick. And because mine takes place right after apparently a Mutanimals like story, so like they're like just wrapping that up. But it, you know, you do yours. One thing I should say, we forgot to say, like the lead in. We're doing these a new way because I do want to cover the adventure comics on the show. But the way we used to do them, where we would like take like a clump of three or five of them and just talk about them, didn't really work. We all had the same stuff to say because they're very basic comics. So we're just going to take turns reading one and explaining it to the other. So what's up? So what happened in 19?
Number 19, the cover is the Turtles, a really weird looking April, a very smug looking Splinter, and Dreadman all trapped in a globe. It has no relevance to the story, but
yeah, most of these covers don't.
I feel like it's their greatest hits album cover. Like, that's the vibe it gives me. So this story is called The Man Who Sold the World, which is a David Bowie song, which for the longest time I thought was a Nirvana song. Didn't realize they had just covered it.
But he told you it was a David Bowie song.
I didn't hear that part. I always,
David Bowie song. David Bowie song. You know what I don't understand about Nirvana? They're still putting out live albums. I'm not even kidding. Like in like 2019, there was a new Nirvana live album that came out. I'm like, you've been sitting on this recording for like 20 years? Like, it's a Nirvana live concert. What is going on? But okay, they're gonna, you know, profiteer's gonna profit.
So Mondo Gecko and the Turtles are on the rooftop discussing UFOs. But at least now I know why Mondo Gecko's there.
Ooh. No, sorry to interrupt you, but I just had this thought. You know how I love internet conspiracy theories. So since then, I found a new favorite one. More so than the Titanic one. On the Nirvana thing, I found there's a section of the internet of crazy conspiracy people who believe that, who believe that Rivers Cuomo from Weezer is Kurt Cobain. He just changed his identity and started playing with Weezer. There's a legit section of the internet that thinks Rivers Cuomo is Kurt Cobain.
Okay. That's...
They don't even look the same to me. I don't know. They are about the same age. I think one of them's like a year older or something. I don't know. They're close in age. So they got that right. But
I'm sick of this grunge thing, guys. I'm moving to Connecticut and starting the best pop rock band of all time.
All right. So sorry. I just wanted to get another weird conspiracy into our show. Let us know on Twitter and Instagram and Patreon. More importantly, if you want us to talk about more conspiracies, that was my favorite Patreon question ever.
So April and Splinter show up on the roof. For some reason, Splinter's wearing a jacket, like a full-blown McGruff the dog, the crime dog jacket. And April says that Splinter was training her how to use a katana, which seems like odd. Because this is supposed to be like
more explanation than the TMNT Splinter gave.
That's true.
I mean, April. Sorry. Than the TMNT April gave.
So, Raph is not there, and his brothers ask why. And April and Splinter say he's either sulking or sewing. So, I don't know. That's just what they put. So, the Turtles are on the roof looking for Null. And there's a building across the way they think that he owns. We go inside the building. There's two giant lobster monsters arguing with Null about hiring lawyers. I don't know why.
Null hasn't really come up on our podcast. So we should point out that...
That's IDW is more where that comes in. But yeah, Null is an evil...
He claims that he's the devil.
Yeah.
Like he claims he's actually the devil. He's got devil horns. He is a very formidable foe. He kind of dresses like the Kingpin.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he's got like a he's got the suit and a cigar a lot of times, and I don't know. He's another Ninja Turtle baddie who claims he's the devil, but it's just worth pointing out who Null is. But go on,
Wesley. So then we go to space where there are UFOs disguised as meteorites coming to Earth, which I think ties into Merman or Man Ray.
Yep.
And then we go back to Null arguing with the Lobster Men, and he tells them he agrees to give their queen Earth if she can hook him up with some interdimensional businesses. Like, I don't know what's going on.
I can't believe Lex Luthor has never done that in a story. Like, where's Lex Luthor's, like, evil plot where he, like, he ends up taking over one of the Thangarian companies from Hawkman comics, or what's another alien race? Like, I don't know. What's that fish guy from Green Lantern?
He takes over that guy's family business, and then yeah, exactly. Brainiac can have Earth. So Man Ray shows up. So this is where he darted off to in your issue, because he finds the meteorites at the bottom of the ocean with the dolphins. Mm-hmm. So they're there.
Yep.
When Man Ray gets near the meteor, it launches him to the island where Dreadman and Jaguar are. This just felt like they were just kept adding things, just add things. And on the island, the meteorite starts to crack open. And then we go back to the turtles on the roof, and they're ambushed by a cowboy.
Yeehaw.
And just before he, you know, gets the drop on them fully, Raph shows up and kicks him in the face. And then the lobster monster...
Yippee-ki-yay, mutant turtle.
The lobster monsters then show up, and one of them can shoot gas out of his head, so he knocks the turtles out, and then Null comes up on the roof, and that's the end of the issue.
That description, you're right. That's why, like, people can't listen to little kids when they describe things, because that's basically what that just sounded like. And then the fish man is looking for meteors in the ocean, but then the dolphins point to it. So the Ninja Turtles, they see a man with gas coming out. And
okay, bye-bye.
Yeah.
And then it also ends with a Mutanimals tease. So,
dun, dun. Yeah. Who are they? What are they? The mutant animal. That's the trailer. That's the teaser.
Oh, man. But, yeah,
it's almost like their name was on the wind.
Everywhere I go, I hear them. I didn't really like reading this issue just because I didn't know what was going on.
They're very hit or miss. I feel bad because I know a big portion of our listeners and a lot of TMNT fans love the adventure comics, but these aren't the turtle comics I grew up with. So, like, I don't know. I don't have a nostalgia factor for them. So I'll admit some of them do hit. They are hit or miss. It's one, yeah. But when they miss, man. Like, we did that one a million years ago. We talked about where the art was really funky. Oh, yeah. And, like...
the stick figure aliens.
There was literally one panel that was just a white panel that looked like they forgot to do it. What was it? It was, like, a white panel with just heads or something.
Yeah. But, so this made more sense as you explained your issue. I'm like, all right, that's why Mondo Gecko is there. But I don't know why Dreadman and Jaguar show back up.
Well, origins, I feel like, are always more fun, too. That's why every superhero franchise has to start with the origin story, because that's usually the most fun part of the story. Like, why is this guy weird, you know? And then once they're weird, you're like, you kind of lose interest.
Remember that fun part of the story where that guy pushed you out of the way of that truck with chemicals and then you got blind? Wasn't that fun?
Now that you say it that way, Daredevil's got one of the most complicated origins. There's a lot of there's a lot in motion for his origin. Like, a lot of, like, what if this happened a little differently? Like, it's not getting bit by something or being caught in an explosion. There's a lot of moving parts. You know what I mean? You got the blind guy that you're pushing out of the way. You've got the truck coming. You've got the chemicals in the truck that have to bounce out now. They have to hit him in the face. Like, there's a lot at play there.
And then somebody has to call your dad, who's in an alleyway beating somebody up for the mob, to come pick you up at the hospital. Well, that's only some versions. That's a lot of versions, though.
Yeah, but they play around, like, his dad's been all over the map on in terms of what he's up to there. The best version is when he's working for the mob, I'll give you that. I'm gonna fight Fade.
So, yeah, that's another Adventure Turtle. So that's how the
Turtles got down in that there issue, huh?
Yeah. They stood around. Well, stay tuned,
because next time we're going to talk about issue 20, and that one is titled Sun and Steel. It's not a song by anybody that I know of.
Sun and Steel.
They should. It'd be really weird if they were all David Bowie songs, though.
That would be bizarre.
and then one of the issues was just straight up Labyrinth with the Ninja Turtles.
You don't have that issue of Ninja Turtle Adventure Comics African Night Flight? That's a really good one.
Okay, that's our show for the week. Thank everybody for listening. Thank you so much. Listening is the best thing you can do to help support this show. And then you could also, you know, tell some people about it. That'd be nice too. Help spread the word so that we get more people doing the listening thing. And the people who listened the hardest, though, are the people who were willing to donate money on our Patreon and help keep the show moving forward. Because there's a few things we're trying to get into. Better recording situations, better ways to get guests recorded, and unfortunately, all those services charge money. So thank you so much for helping us out. Ian, Janky Zipper, Lenny Not Dead, Luis Diaz, Naris Corpse, Noe, and Rob Luther. If you want to help support the show, you can head on over to Patreon. We've got a page there. It is at TMNT Nerds. You'll find us no problem. I'm pretty sure we're the only TMNT Nerds on there. So go check us out there. And if you do, for as little as $1 a month pledge, you get bonus episodes every single week of a show Sean and I call Nerd Therapy, where we talk about all the stuff that isn't Ninja Turtles, that is on our minds, and we just get it out of our system, and it's Nerd Therapy for us. So go over, do that. Remember to subscribe to the show if you're not subscribed already, because you don't want to miss any episodes. And we will see you next week for Image Comics Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 7. See you then.